Coffee Sketch Podcast is our take on the intersection of old tech and new tech, the space between the traditional practice of the hand-drawn sketch that has been performed by architects and designers for centuries, and the modern-day use of the hashtag as a representation of a sentiment or a movement. Each week we plan to deliver a new pod about our ideas, sketches, and what's going on in our daily lives as we pursue our love of architecture, design, and sharing this knowledge with the next generation. I'm Kurt, and I'm in Flint.
And I'm Jamie, and I'm in Austin.
Hey, Jamie. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there. You know, it's been a tough couple weeks. Definitely a tough couple weeks. But yeah, I'm hanging in there. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I would agree. I think, you know, you have moments of, I've had moments, and I'm sure you have too, that things kind of feel normal. And then you learn a little bit more. I've learned a little bit more about this virus, and then it kind of puts everything back into a, I wouldn't say fear mode, but, you know, a perspective that, you know, we're still not out of this thing. And, you know, as much as people want to get, you know, reopened and all that, you gotta be careful. And it's a very mental exercise, because it's not something you can see. You know, the virus is invisible, so you know you're not really, well, it's microscopic, right? So there's no like massive physical threat in front of you, but it's something that you have to heed and sort of respect. So
and that's the thing, is I think it's something that, you know, I think you were going to say you've been reading a lot, but, you know, I mean, you and I have been talking a lot, you know, offline, and it's a difficult exercise for a lot of people, to really kind of grapple with something that, really has changed, you know, every aspect of our daily life. And then when guidance has been mixed, you know, local, county, state, national, you know, in my job, you know, I have to deal with a lot of different cities, you know, spread throughout the state. And that's been, you know, I think the echo that I've heard, you know, more and more is just, that guidance is very, very mixed. And in some cases, you know, counterintuitive to what you're hearing. So you're hearing one thing locally or experiencing one thing locally, and then you can go, you know, in Texas, we joke about, you know, there's Texas distance, you know, and Michigan, you've told me about some of your travels as well. And so I think you can appreciate this, is that, but in Texas, you'll drive 100 miles, you know, or you'll drive 200 miles. And that's not crazy. And and in that you've traversed lots of different jurisdictions. And in this context, is each of those jurisdictions is dealing with things very, very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, yeah, if you can hear Tinkerbell in the background, she's very, very concerned about this. I mean, like, adamantly concerned. So
if we all just stayed home, as Tink just told everybody.
She's like, why? Like, why? She's seeing people out on the street right now, and she's like, why aren't you in your house?
Sorry, curfew people.
Like, why do you not have a mask on? So, but yeah, there's a lot of that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, distance is, it's one of those things we just chatted about. You know, there's no political definition of a COVID virus, and there's no geographic definition either.
Well, I mean, I have family, you know, in Canada, and, you know, one of whom is a healthcare worker, and she contracted COVID. You know, fortunately, you know, she's recovered, and you know, but it was certainly scary for a long time. And I have several members of my family who are in the healthcare industry in Canada, and I was I have been and continue to be very worried about them. But it's, you know, and everybody probably has, you know, different people in their life, you know, that they're equally concerned about. I mean, aging parents, you know, aunts, uncles, friends, you know, young children, you know, I mean, some people have, you know, medical conditions that, you know, they can live with day to day and are invisible, you know, in some respects, but they might be in, you know, an immune deficit, you know, or someone in their family might be, and, you know, that puts them at risk. And that's the thing is that I think that a lot of people don't necessarily consider, which is, you know, this is a, you know, it's a global pandemic. It's, you know, certainly a national issue here. You know, my family in Canada, you know, looking at kind of our national politics and our national response, you know, on their news, you know, through their sources, really highlights, you know, in sort of a very Canadian way, the, you know, their perspective on things and the lens that they're seeing things through. And, you know, I was joking with you before is like, even with my parents, who didn't have the benefit of an education, or at least even a partial education here in the United States. So their perspective on certain things that I have different perspective on is certainly evident in times like this. And, it's one where, especially when I talk to my family back home, a lot of them just can't process it. They just can't understand, what, you know, what our jurisdictions are doing, you know, what the public response is. And especially when we've had at least one family member who's contracted it now, you know, hopefully recovered, you know, completely, you know, it's close to home, you know, and you realize the magnitude of it. And we're not, you know, in Texas for sure, we're not trending in the right way. So it's a big concern for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, it's to my last point, you just made me think of one thing is, how, you know, my governor here in Michigan is caught all kinds of flack for, you know, being very restrictive, more restrictive than other states. But yet look at you could compare the two curves between Michigan and Texas, and, you know, ours is trending downward while at your state is trending upward. So regardless of the political party, you know, the decision making and sort of preparedness or you know, safety concerns are leading the way toward, you know, the statistics at this point really don't lie, right? The results are what they are, and the decision making kind of proves one works and one doesn't. And so anyway, it's not trying to be political, but
no, well, I think it's also equally important to kind of note, I mean, and that's the thing about Texas is it's an awfully big state. And, you know, I joke about the Texas distance thing is, you know, for me to drive 200 miles in a weekend isn't crazy, you know, for someone in another state, they can't even fathom that. And, it's, you know, but that's Texas. I mean, you do that. And, you know, equally so is that you have, you know, quite a number of, very, very large population centers. But then at the same time, also some very, very small rural cities, or smaller resident, you know, smaller municipalities spread throughout the state. And, you know, it's certainly not, the response isn't the same everywhere, you know, and it's not necessarily, you know, tied to size of the city or political party or region or any of that. I think it's a lot of different factors, and you know, and that's, you know, that's just sort of an interesting reality. I saw a statistic where someone was trying to draw a correlation just for comparison purposes, and I'm not going to get this right, but they were taking the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. You know, Dallas and Fort Worth are clearly two very, very different cities, and if you've ever been to either one, they are very, very different cities. But the Metroplex, you know, however you gerrymander, you know, which cities you include in that, you know, that population center of the two of them, you know, with the DFW airport, which many Americans have, you know, flown through on some connecting flight, even if you've never been to the cities themselves, the population of that Metroplex, however you draw the lines, is bigger than some of the states and state populations in the United States.
Oh, right. Oh, sure.
And so when you're talking about a geographic area that is like, you know, two cities and then, you know, the surrounding cities around them, and that population is, you know, greater than many, many states, it's a very different animal. And it's certainly one that I think has been a challenge here in Texas, from the things at least that I've seen, you know, both personally and professionally.
Yeah. And I hope, you know, our listeners don't mind us kind of keep catching each other up, you know, on current events, especially since we kind of, you know, come from two poles of the country, you know, north and parts of the country. So it's our time. I take the selfish moment to say that it's our time to catch up. But I don't know if I mentioned it the last time we talked. My coffee intake has gotten a new flavor. I got I had a gift card to Starbucks that I used and picked up some anniversary blend from the South Pacific. I don't know. So I figure I'd give it. It was a limited thing, right? So I either could have gotten a staple coffee bean or try this short run. And since I had a gift card, I was like, oh, why not? You know, then I can brag about it to Jamie on the podcast.
Well, it's funny because it's like you say that and like, I, you know, maybe we're of two minds right now. I mean, we're kind of on the same wavelength for a change with our coffee. I have recently ordered and had it because it's a very cool, like they roast these beans here locally. They get the beans from somewhere else, which I'll explain in a second. But this company is Austin based, and they roast them, and then they deliver them locally in Austin the next day. So you order, and then 24 hours later, you've got like freshly roasted beans to grind at your leisure. So I bought a little bit for myself to enjoy. And the one that I have right now that I just got and am enjoying is the Thai Paigon by Little City. And it's a Myanmar beans. And so it's sort of one of their, they have a sort of a special agreement with some individuals there to get this stuff there. It's naturally produced. And has some interesting flavors that I thought would be fun to try. They describe it as pineapple and cocoa. And I have to, when I read that, as a possibility, I couldn't fathom what that might taste like. And I have to say it actually does. So, it's very, very interesting. And for UND, I was going to say is you might be looking for a care package soon that maybe has this in it. So anyhow, there is that.
Secrets out, man.
Secrets out. So
thanks.
Good coffee. yeah, treated. Yeah, funny. You know, it's that Dale Cooper. You have to give yourself a little gift, you know.
Coop.
Yes.
The nice. yeah. So yeah, the South Pacific is on the menu today.
Right. Apparently.
So we've got a couple of sketches to jump into. So I one has some history to it, I gotta imagine. And one new, which has a lot of its own history as well. But so first we decided to talk about this one that you dated on May, so it's just a month ago, but it has some themes in it from the past that we've talked about, little bits here and there. And so what do we say? You know, we have a gas mask figure photograph. So it's a collage here. I couldn't remember. The gas mask figure has been in one of our episodes before. Is it you or is it a friend that wears the gas mask here?
Though I do have a gas mask of my very own, and it's iconic as something that there is a reason probably, but this isn't me. It is a photo that I did take, and it was a photography project from college, and I convinced a friend of mine for my end of semester photography project to wear a gas mask in unlikely circumstances, and wear it. And of course, you know, it's like precognition now, right? So you have a situation where everybody is masked all over the United States. And, you know, whenever they go out in public, clearly not gas masks. So that would be kind of overdoing it, and cliche and maybe, I don't even know what the word is, but in this circumstance, it was one where can you have somebody who, really looks the part of fish out of water, where they're wearing something, their demeanor is very normal, and they're not doing anything strange per se, but they're wearing this mask. And you know, in this particular sketch, this was one of the last scenes we did. This particular photo, he's actually smoking a cigarette. He's taken the respirator portion of the mask off so that it appears that he's taking the cigarette through the gas mask. But at the same time, he's wearing a black suit, black tie, white shirt. And so there's this formality and at the same time, this juxtaposition of this strangeness, and then sort of breaking the rules at the same time. That was something I liked, all the contradictions of this photo. And then also the series was just that. It was this series of contradictions and, you know, creating almost a sense of uncomfortability. Or uncomfortability, is that a word?
It is now.
It is now, yeah, today. And so it was something that I was really exploring, I think. And all black and white, all photos that I, you know, printed myself and developed myself, and, you know, the old school techniques, which were super fun.
Yeah, so in this sketch, in the collage, you have the photograph. Did you do any cutting, like exacto cutting, or you just drew kind of right on top of it?
Yeah, I've done this before. There's a little bit of cuts in it, but not a great deal. And Some of it's time too, and patience with it. I mean, I'm working on my sketchbook again, so it's relatively small. But I have drawn over these photos, and it's a really good photo paper. So I know that the Pilot pen that I like, and it's one of the things that's, I don't know if they're specifically designed that way or what, but, you know, as much as they're a relatively inexpensive pen, they are one that really takes on multiple surfaces really well. So in this particular case, I was able to draw right over the top of the photo and then disguise almost the edge of the photo. Within the overall composition. I even used Conte crayon in this and used some of the Conte over the top of the photo to kind of bleed that edge.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. And I'm surprised it soaks in the ink versus, just kind of smearing. You know, it's not like a coated, must not be a coated, or if it is, it has a nice, it's good paper.
Well, it's also that the Pilot pen has a really, really tight nib, and it's metal. So there's a way that it sort of breaks that upper level of the paper. I mean, we're getting super technical now. But I think it almost rips the paper a little bit. When I've done some watercolor sketches in other contexts, the problem with using the Pilot pen afterwards is if the paper has gotten super saturated and gotten thinner, it tends to tear. So it just, you know, different media, different mediums to work on. But yeah, so the gas mask certainly was an icon that sort of came up in my work early on and then, you know, appears every once in a while. But the thing I think that a lot of people don't maybe recognize is that, so if you do follow these sketches on Instagram or if you follow the links, you'll see that the name I use is Fallout Studio. And so that's my nom de plume, you know, and that the icon for that has always been an individual in a gas mask. So this is sort of a nod to a lot of that, but it's at the same time, an interesting collage where I'm exploring some of these mixed media pieces. This one is another one that's shown in full color. And there's this sort of hybridization of the landscape, but also a figure appears. So there's the figure is actually another collage, and that one's exactoed in. So that's from a larger figure drawing piece.
Wow. I mean, I can't even see the edge. So you're talking about the legs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of like so from almost knee down, it's really cool. So that is, was not done at the same time. That was from another drawing that you kind of stole it from, and you
know. Yeah, I stole it, and I liked that I had something. I had been working on some larger collage pieces, and in stumbling across this particular one, I realized that the two legs, the way they were positioned, I think was rendered really, really well. But at the same time, it made me think of the fold in a book. And so I was like, oh, I can actually use this in the sketchbook, and I can sort of set it right at the fold in the book and really change the nature of the way this page reads. And I've never tried that before. Not in this particular way. And so I was happy with the way it turned out.
Yeah. Now that you pointed out that it does, yeah, span the crease, it's hard to see the crease, which is kind of where it gives it away, in that sense. But is there one other thing about this is that to the left of the legs, in a very kind of shadow on the, Sorry, Siri picked up on me. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Siri's like, what are you talking about, Kurt?
I know. Super distracting. I'm going to have to turn that off. I never use it anyway. To the left, left edge of the page, there's this sort of almost like an imprint that almost looks like a face, like a, you know, the top kind of looks like some hair, and especially with the hybrid sketch over top, it's sort of this ghosted shape of like a human head, almost like it's a mirror image to the gas mask figure, right? That's the way I'm seeing in this. It's really interesting. Sort of.
I didn't see that until you, as you were describing it. I thought you were looking at there was a little bit of an attempt at the far left of the page to kind of draw a smaller figure in really, really simple line work. And I thought that's where you were talking. But as you described it, I was like, oh, okay, you're seeing how I was trying to balance the two. With some of these shapes, and you're reading it as a face, which is kind of interesting because I that wasn't intentional, but it was more of a black, gray, and overall white space sort of that I was really trying to, you know, balance the two sides of the page, because I was again bridging that divide, you know, in the sketchbook, and you know, one side's more sketch and one side's more photo. But wanting to make sure that, and that's the thing that's always been the challenge for me with collage, and I'm fascinated by collage, and definitely don't have the confidence to say that I'm good at it. But it's one where I don't like the edges of materials, being really, really evident. I want to try and disguise them as much as I can. And so the sketchbook for me was one, this exercise was a way to like experiment with almost how can I disguise that there's three things going on here. I was pretty pleased with it. I mean, you know, it's, it wasn't a long exercise, you know, either. And, but it was certainly one where, that was the objective. And I, you know, for that, I was pretty pleased. I mean, the stories behind it are kind of interesting too, but as an exercise, I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah. Well, you got me. I mean, obviously the photograph is pretty evident, but then as it layers with all the other sketch components, I didn't realize there was another layer of paper. So that's cool. It's really neat. I really like the that sort of rusty orange Conte crayon color. It's a nice tone in comparison with the black pen and the black Conte and the white paper. It makes a nice pop.
Yeah, I mean,
with color is not always in your Instagram feed. So
it's funny because it's the one that I discovered it a long time ago, and you know, I definitely kind of go back to it. There's just a way to kind of hold it and use it, and you know, using the side, using the tip, you can get incredible gradation, you know, with that color, and it just renders really, really well on lots of different paper surfaces, without a whole lot of effort. And I think that's the whole thing, is as you're sort of figuring it out, and the foot, you can kind of see some of that gradation, you know, that's one pull of the Conte crayon.
Yeah, that's nice.
And it's just sort of nice. You get a really kind of hard edge, but then you get this sort of, you know, multitude of tone. There's some gray Contes that do the same thing. You know, charcoal is always great. But you know, what's interesting is I was looking at lots of sketches that I had in sort of my archive and trying to pull things together for some larger collage pieces. And, you know, these ones always stand out, but the other ones that do that I've probably never shown in any of these, and, you know, maybe it'll appear in the sketchbook, is I did a series of figure sketches where it's a lot of graying of the form and then coming back in with either a tortillon to really kind of get a smooth tone, but at the same time also coming in with a kneaded eraser and then pulling out white highlights on that darkened form. And it gives this very, very ethereal kind of look to the figures. And it's very, very unique. And it's just sort of something that I had one drawing instructor, teach it in one class and just sort of stuck with me. And then I kept trying to experiment with it. And it's something that I come back to from time to time. But it's, I'll definitely put one of those out here soon. We can talk about it. It's cause it's very, it's very, very different. And what's funny is, when that teacher showed it to me, I've never ever seen, I can't say that I've seen anybody do a whole piece in that technique or utilizing the, utilizing that to a large extent. I've seen aspects of it in drawings, but never where you're sort of rendering a full figure that way. That's not to say that somebody hasn't done it, but it just has a really kind of ethereal ghost kind of quality to it that's very, very unique. I'll find some of those to post here soon.
Sure. Is that color, that orange color though, is that like the kind that you buy like a whole box at a time of one color?
Well, the Conte crayons are kind of expensive, so you only buy like, 4 or 5 sticks. So you use them down to their nothing.
Yeah. But you have that probably more than one of that color.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah,
especially during pandemic, right? You don't want to run out.
You're not going to the art supply store for sure.
So, should we jump to the newer sketch? It has some. Maybe the color orange is a good segue, given the theme of this sketch.
And the gas mask, of course. So.
And the gas mask, as far as, wait, you lost me.
Well, I mean, the gas mask to me is one where, I didn't say it before, but when I was looking at kind of icons and trying to, kind of understand where I was as an artist, and then maybe, trying to understand, different ideologies and propaganda and, from a graphic design perspective or design as protest kind of perspective. One of the things, one of the artists that I stumbled upon was Shepard Fairey, Obe Giant. As we've talked a lot about, architects and, theories of architecture or design that influenced both of us when we were in college. Shepard's work, was really sort of, burgeoning around that same time. And so you would see, graffiti and murals and these stencils that were just starting to, captivate the populace. He's got a very, very different, footprint, obviously, over time. But what's interesting is that something that I've held on to that I've had for I don't even know how long is when he first started selling T-shirts. Each T-shirt was sold with a stencil that you could you know, that was part of that, like the tag. Like, so you could, you know, take the tag, and use it as your own stencil, for spray paint. I'm not saying whether I did or didn't do that, but, what was neat was on the back of it. And I saved that too, is, it literally says, two things, propaganda kit. And then there's a, you know, a warning and discretion, you know, to be used, and he describes that. But there's also a manifesto. And so as an artist and as an architect who was, you know, trying to understand a lot of what had come before, you know, civil unrest, you know, design theory, you know, right or wrong, you know, all these different sort of design manifestos, you know, that I could read and kind of try and understand, you know, here was somebody who was a little bit older than me, but not too much older than me, and was toying with, you know, propaganda and graphic design in a very, popularized or pop culture kind of way. And I was just fascinated by it. So, the thing, you know, a couple things that sort of stand out is that he talks about phenomenology, and, mm-hmm. you know, phenomenology is, you know, making sure that you're kind of reawakening people's ideas about a sense of wonder about one's environment. You know, it's trying to stimulate curiosity with an iconic image. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, you know, for people to start to question things, and sort of question their surroundings. But I think the other part is that, and it provokes, and there's always, you know, a provocation in that, which I think is good. But at that also, you know, he explicitly says on this is the medium is the message. And, you know, for somebody who may or may not have done graffiti in their life, and or appreciates those who do it, but also sees themselves as an architect and an artist, is that the medium, you know, our artwork, our visual images, our coffee sketches in this case, you know, do carry messages. I mean, that's why we're doing this podcast. And so I'm often reminded of just that sort of simple phrase and how many ways you can take it, but at the same time, just sort of, you know, sit back and think about it for a moment. And, you know, in, you know, which led me to this sketch, you know, that we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Well, that makes more sense. I lost for a second because my segue was trying to tie it with the orange and kind of how, Cristo. So there's part of this sketch is sort of an homage to Cristo, who recently passed away, who used, the color orange.
Yes.
Not just the color orange, but many uniform bright colors in his fabric projects. And so, you know, the Conte crayon orange, and then your sketch here where you're draping the AIA National Headquarters Octagon House, the sort of iconic centerpiece of AIA National, in a fabric imprinted with the sort of protest fist, I guess, the raised fist in graphic, kind of super graphic on this banner.
It's the symbol for Black Lives Matter. I mean, I mean, they've adopted that. I mean, and they adopted that. I mean, it's one, you know, if you think about, the iconic Olympic protest, you know, with a raised black gloved fist. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, all of those things are ones that, you know, we talked about, you know, Shepard with the iconography that he's playing with in graphic design. And it's very deliberate. I mean, it's one where it has to be recognizable. And in that case, the medium is the message as well. I mean, it's, you're, And then, you know, and then the thing about that phrase, the medium is the message, is you can invert it, you know, and that the message is also, you know, inherent in the medium to me. And I think that that's the thing about art. And, you know, some people have talked about the phrase design as protest. And I think it's sort of the same thing, is that it's not a new concept, you know, but it is powerful, you know, and, you know, a lot of people are saying that, you know, it's maybe not indicative of a lot of change. But I think that, you know, a lot of change has to come from inciting people to want to change, you know, to provoking people to think. And I think that art, you know, in its broadest sense, makes people think. And, you know, at that level, I think that that's really, really important right now, as well. I mean, and, you know, there's a lot of statements being made and a lot of protests in the streets. And I fully support those personally. And I know that you do as well, but I think that in my particular case is that as an artist is that, when I'm having trouble and difficulty in explaining the way that I feel or the thoughts that I'm having, I turn to my drawings. And I've told you is that I've had a lot of trouble drawing lately. I mean, there's, it's a lot of things to process. You know, there's a lot of difficulties and challenges in the world, and it's certainly affected me. I'm sure it's affected you and others as well. But at the same time, that activity, that idea of drawing and art carrying forth a bigger, broader message, not where the message stops, but maybe the message inspires or educates in some cases, or is in and of itself bold enough to challenge authority in a way that maybe institutions need to be challenged. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of those things sort of coalesced in this sketch for me. It's just things that I've been thinking about. And as an architect, I couldn't think of a better place to have a protest image. You know, like it's, you know, the phrase design is protest, a lot of people are using it. And there's a lot of talented people who are doing a lot of very important work around that subject matter. And I wouldn't begin to speak, you know, to the breadth of it. But for me, as an architect, if I'm thinking of the best location for our profession to have something front and center about this time period that we're living in and this movement and this protest that are very, very important, both for us culturally and for our country, but also for our profession, it, you know, front and center to me is put it on the doorstep.
Right. If any of our listeners are not architects, yeah, this is the front facing outermost, you know, facade of where the head of our architecture membership group resides nationally. So, and I think it, you know, conceptually there's some, you know, fitting nuance with being in the same week that we found out about Christo, the artist who likes to wrap things. And you know, like you said, as art causes people to think, or hopefully inspires people to question and think, you know, Christo's, you know, sort of, I wouldn't say, I want to say simple move, but it's not a simple move to wrap a building in, you know, a full-size building in fabric, but it is a gesture that it, you know, provokes a lot of discussion and thought, I would imagine, if you were to stand there and see, you know, a full-size building completely draped in some kind of cloth or fabric. And so, you know, while, you know, Christo is in the art world, that sort of ventures into public space, but with, you know, with his art pieces, I thought this was a really poignant and beautiful sketch for, you know, weaving together all of the aspects, at least within the architecture community.
And things that we've been talking about recently, you know, I mean, you know, we had our, you know, our first, not our first big guest, but, you know, we haven't done very many guests. And one of the things we talked about with Matt was, you know, our shared love of Christo, you know, and sort of his, you know, the, you know, how art influences our lives. And so, we recorded that and, you know, we were talking about, you know, his, you know, his planned trip with his wife, that he was going to go to Paris and see the work. And then, you know, COVID happened and things got postponed and I was talking about wanting to go as well. And then, you know, Christo passed away. And so it was sort of a couple different things that we, you know, we have talked about. I don't know. You were talking about the orange, which is, you know, the gates in New York that, ironically, Matt couldn't remember if he had actually seen in Central Park. and I have Christo and Jean-Claude, his partner, and collaborator, you know, came to Austin and, they were, doing a lecture and kind of all that stuff. And they did a meet and greet. And, so I have a signed postcard of, with an orange, you know, kind of Sharpie crayon, which was beautiful, of the gates in New York, which I never got to see. So it's sort of ironic to me is like, I know this work and I have this signed piece from Christo, but like, yeah, I never got to see it. You know, but I did take my daughter to London, and saw, his work in Hyde Park. Which wasn't, you know, a wrapped piece. It was one of the other themes that he had, you know, was present in his work. Because it's all environmental art. But I think, you know, the thing that struck me about this moment was I'm sitting there watching these protests outside the White House in Washington, D.C. I'm seeing people get tear gassed and whatnot, you know, on the streets of our capital in a plaza that I've spent many, 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 many opportunities in. You know, DC is one of those cities that when I've said this to many friends, it's like, it's one of the few cities in the United States that I've probably been to so many times and and for a long time, I wasn't even a citizen of this country. But it was one of those like memorable things for me was that my mother, we hadn't even been in the country a year. And there was and we moved to Georgia, when we moved here. And, long story short was we didn't live in Georgia even a year. But we were going to move to the West Coast for my dad's job. But in that time period, like my mom, you know, we had to go back and forth to Montreal a couple times, you know, to kind of prepare for the move. And I was very, very young. And so, and my grandparents didn't really like to fly. So DC is in between Montreal and Georgia. And you realize how long a distance that is. So when we got to DC, you know, we're in a car and my mom, you know, kind of insisted, and I remember this, it's like one of those early moments in my life where she insisted that I see lots of things in DC because she knew that it was important.
Yeah.
Historically, it was important for me to see a lot of these monuments and these things. Yeah. And I've been fortunate to go back, but you know, the White House in that area, I know the space, you know, as an architect now, I know that space.
Right.
And so the Octagon, you know, I know that space too. I've spent time at AIA National Headquarters, which is a modern building that wraps sort of like an L around the Octagon. And right. For those who don't know what the Octagon is, Kurt started to allude to it, is the Octagon was the temporary White House when the British burned D.C. during the War of 1812. So Madison, President Madison, used the Octagon as his residence and where he also signed the Treaty of Ghent. And so that building, you know, has massive historical significance as basically an alternate White House. It's now being controlled by the American Architectural Foundation, a nonprofit arm of our National Professional Association that preserves that building because of its historical significance, which is great. But for me, you know, and I've been in the building, and it's an amazing historical treasure. I mean, it's sort of, you know, this really unique architecture. You know, it's a type of, it's an architect building that apparently was built in that time period several times. So it's got a unique shape, you know, unique architecture, but it was the White House for a time being, which is kind of amazing. You know, when, you know, for as a student of history and then also a non-citizen, now a citizen, you know, who kind of has a different appreciation for American history, and it's all sort of new to me at times, learning this was exciting. So my immediate design process connection was, wow, what if we could wrap this building? You know, and who is that speaking to? Is it speaking to like the broader American culture? Yes, it is. They don't even realize what this building is. Is it speaking to our profession? Yes, absolutely. And like you say, it harkens back to Christo because, you know, for those who are sort of, mildly associated with his work or, you know, or mildly aware of it, probably his best known work. And if you've never seen images of it, not you, Kurt, but if someone who's listening who has never seen images of it, look at the Reichstag. Mm-hmm. And then read about it and realize what's happening at that time period. Because it's not just that this artist did this thing and wow, that's pretty amazing. But think about what that artwork is saying at that time period. You know, Germany hadn't been reunified. It was going through reunification. You know, that's World War II. That's, you know, the whole, I mean, that was, you know, the war to end all wars. That was, you know, we split a country in half. The Reichstag was the seat of government and it sat derelict for like 25 years or something like that. I mean, longer maybe. And it's gets wrapped and then gets reconstructed. And so what we see it as today as a seat of government is a building by Norman Foster with a new dome and all these other things. But in between that, Christo wraps it. And it's this sort of art as protest and art as memory that I think is really, really unique and maybe not given as much credit as it should, you know, for the subtlety of why that building, why that time period. And so, you know, for, you know, the Octagon, you know, I just sort of was struck by it all. I mean, it just, you know, the connection started to make sense to me, and you know, you had some other reactions to it, which I appreciated as well, that were musically inclined. But yeah, I think it's, it all sort of came together, and admittedly too, is that, it was something that was inspired by, you know, somebody who had posted a tweet, you know, talking about, you know, what should the AI do? You know, is there something, you know, from a designist protest, you know, standpoint? And I'm not sure that, you know, that was necessary, you know, but I liked the idea, the provocation of asking that question. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, gave her a shout out as well. You know, 'cause I was listening, and I appreciated her saying that, because I think it really kind of, it made me think about the situation differently, and kind of got me to draw, and I hadn't been drawing for a while.
Right. Yeah, that was, you know, what was, you know, one of many, positive outcomes for a way to process all this is, you know, being, you know, a challenging subject matter, and then, you know, thinking of this sketch, I think, as just one piece of many ways to express your support, right, and to help amplify the Black Lives Matter voices, and all of the you know, protests around the country and around the world, really, at this point. And so, you know, as a way to just, you know, be there without, you know, it's not, and I know you know this, it's not just about you, but it's about, you know, providing support and amplifying others, the melanated voices, as the hashtags say, at the same time, or at, you know, at this time. So, yeah, I mean, I appreciate your expanded, explanation of the meanings that, you know, some I did know, and then some I didn't, most I didn't really know. And especially with your own personal anecdote, I really appreciate that, because it can, it just helps continue that discussion, continue the curiosity, I think is something that we talked about a lot today. So, I don't know. I'm kind of, I have nothing much more to add to that, because of the intensity of the sketch. So obviously this is going to get posted on the show notes, and as the first sketch. And I think we just want to continue that conversation and that provocation, as you say.
Well, and then, you know, looking for, I think, within our own work and lives is additional opportunities to listen. Mm-hmm. And then have conversations and amplify other voices. You know, we've been you know, trying to do that as much as we can between the two of us, but I think it's one where you know, a sketch like this might be interpreted by some as, you know, not having a great deal of thought or meaning behind it. And that's okay. You know, somebody at a cursory glance might take it that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. You know, but, you know, for me, you know, I appreciate Melissa, you know, tweeting what she did when she did. And then for my mind to go where it went, you know, thinking about Christo, thinking about the White House, thinking about my own personal experiences, you know, thinking about Rage Against the Machine, and, you know, all the, you know, wonderful tweets from Tom Morello of late. But it's, yeah, it, it, you know, my mind went there and this is what came out. And so, you know, I appreciate you giving me a chance to talk about it. Cause it's seldom that I talk about my sketches in this way. A lot of it's technique, a lot of it's anecdotal. This is one where it's really maybe getting at the heart of, a lot of different ideas and a lot of the why for, you know, how things maybe come about. And, you know, like you said, I mean, I think there's plenty of opportunity for you and me to listen more, and then amplify more voices. And I think we'll both continue to try and do that. And appreciate everybody listening to us, you know, talk about it. And I hope everyone likes the sketch as well. So, or at least gives them, you know, a moment to think about it.
Yeah. Totally agree. All right. Well, I'll leave you with the last word. I'll probably chop this part off. Cause luckily at the magic of editing, I can make me sound a little better than you don't need any help. But, thank you for listening. We both hope that you enjoyed this episode of Coffee Sketch Podcast. Our theme music is provided by my brother, who goes by at Cold Fashioned on Instagram and Twitter. Our podcast is hosted at coffeesketch.buzzsprout.com. Find more show notes and information from this episode. And finally, if you like what you heard, please rate us on iTunes and share us with your friends. Thank you.